Today, as today's Lag Bomer, I thought it'd be appropriate to discuss a very deep Kabbalistic topic as we celebrate Rashbi's Yahrzeit today. Kohn told me yesterday that Rashbi is actually a Gilgal Moshe Rabbeinu. Zohar writes that in a number of places. Very fitting to discuss Gilgulim, which is very much based on Kabbalah, with the background music outside as we're celebrating Lag Bomer. Gilgulim itself, the word Gilgulim, Lag Bomer, double Lag in there. Now, the discussion of Gilgulim, someone was telling me yesterday that in the school he went to, it was known the principal was so anti the concept of Gilgulim, and one was not allowed to mention Gilgulim, and to the point where a perm spiel was once made. That's how bad of a topic was to mention. They made a whole spiel about that. The other extreme, I read somewhere, I don't remember who was the name of it, wasn't a Hasidic Rebbe, there's someone else who mentioned that nowadays everybody believes in Gilgulim. Gilgulim is a fundamental principle of Judaism. So let's go through the different sources, whether it is a Jewish concept, whether it's not a Jewish concept, Achronim, Rishonim, Poskim, and maybe a little bit how it works to a certain extent. So firstly, it's not mentioned anywhere in the Tanakh. Nowhere in Tanakh does it mention anything about Gilgulim. Now, various Mikubalim, Hasidim find sources, hints to it, but it's not explicitly in the Tanakh. Now, the fact that it's not explicit in the Tanakh does not mean it's not true. We have other ideas that don't exist in the Tanakh explicitly yet are true, such as?
Olam Haba.
Shchita. Olam Haba. Tchias HaMesim. Those are two very Mashiach. Those are all things that are not explicit in the Tanakh, yet they are principles, part of the 13 principles of Rambam. Now, it's not mentioned in the Mishnah and Gemara, while the other things are mentioned. Now, that, you know, gets a little bit now, if it's not mentioned in the Mishnah and the Gemara, so maybe it's not really true. So there are many things that are not mentioned in the Gemara that the Kabbalah, the Zohar writes. They have to start saying, who wrote the Zohar? Do we follow the Zohar? What's in the Zohar? We'll have to learn the Zohar. The Zohar mentions Gilgulim countless times. The first one ever to mention, actually before that even, Rav Sadik Gaon. Rav Sadik Gaon, who was known to be versed in Sifrei Kabbalah, he was very against the concept of Gilgulim. Now someone at Taina had, he had access to the Zohar, which he did not have, maybe he would have agreed to it. Some say his interpretation of Gilgul, well, he was going against a certain understanding of Gilgul, it wasn't the way we understand Gilgul. Okay, hard to always know, it's just speculation. Rav Yosef Alba, the author of the Sefer HaYikrim, also was very much against, from the 14th century, was very much against Gilgulim. Many others were also. But the Sefer Bahir, is perhaps the earliest work of Kabbalah we have. The Sefer Bahir was written by the Tana, Rav Nechunya ben Akana. He was a Tana, and he wrote the Sefer Bahir, and a number of places in the Sefer Bahir, he addresses the concept of Gilgulim. Noteworthy, the reason why he, not the reason, but the way in which he talks about it is the very big question of Tzadik V'Ra'lo. How is it possible that you have a Tzadik, and yet bad things happen to him? And everyone has their different reasons. The Gemara talks about, because even a Tzadik has a certain amount of Avera, so even at a very low type of, not such a very severe Avera, but still, the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to cleanse him of any ounce of Avera in this world to have a pure experience of Olam Haba. Sefer Bar says, no, what's Tzadik V'Ra'lo? Tzadik V'Ra'lo means that from a previous Gilgal, the previous Gilgal had a certain amount of Averos, he needed a tikkun for him. He came back as this new person, with the same Neshama, but the new person. And he's a Tzadik in this world, and the Yisurim he's receiving is for the Takana, the tikkun he's needed for his previous Averos. Now, the Sefer Bar writes this, as does Rabbeinu Bachya, Rabbeinu Bachai, in his Sefer Kad V'Kemach, and the Ramban, in Shar HaGemul, where he talks about the idea of Eov, the famous story of Eov, Tanakh, Eov, Tzadik, and Kadosh Baruch Hu was once talking to the Satan says to him, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu prays that you haven't, there's no one like Eov, there's no one like Eov, the best person ever, there's no one comparable to Eov. And Satan says, let me test him out. So, okay, fine, you could test him out. He tests him out, and he wipes out all his property, he kills his family, his children, everything. And Eov was a tzaddik. Kadosh Baruch Hu testified what a tzaddik he was. How is it possible that Eov experienced all these different things? So it ends up being that they say it's based on Tzadik V'Ra'lo, based on Gilgulim. Right, it was a Gilgul. Now, I read through the different pages of Rabbeinu Bachai and Ramban who talk about this, but Gemara Baba Basra does discuss how Eov there's a huge machlokas, like a 10-way machlokas, when Eov actually lived. So either it means it never really happened, it was a mashal of some sort, or maybe Eov didn't live in many generations as a Gilgal, and each time he experienced different things. But see, the Sefer Bar uses the concept of Gilgal to explain Tzadik V'Ra'lo. First, Mar Malcolm, the handouts, discusses the mitzvah of Yibum. As we're coming closer to Shavuos, Rus is all based in Yibum. Rus and Boaz, whose husband dies, she remarries to a relative, to a Karov. And the Pasuk says, in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yehuda and Tamar, so Yehuda says to one of his sons, he says, Vayovim Osova Hakam Zer La'achecha. He says, now take hold, your brother died. Your brother died. Now step in his shoes and v'hokam zer la'achicha, and establish a child for your brother. What does it mean v'hokam zer la'achicha? So Rashi says haben yikare al shem hames. The son, the newborn son, will be called based on the deceased brother. That's what the pasuk means. Ramban says, I don't understand. That's not true. Nowhere ever do you find in halacha, nowhere in Shas is there an idea to call the new baby based on the deceased brother. It doesn't exist. Now, bring you a great raya from Rus. What happens? Rus and Boaz get married. They have a child. What's the name of the child? Oved. It wasn't named Boaz after the Machla based on the deceased brother. It was Oved. Nothing to do. You don't name it after the deceased brother. Where's Rashi getting this from? So what's Pshat and Yibum? Listen carefully. Aval ha'inyan sod gadol misudos ha'torah b'toldos ha'adam. It's a deep secret which is a foundation of human mankind. The nikeh hu le'enei ro'am, it's recognizable to those who see. Asher nosen lehem Hashem einayim, to those who HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave eyes to see. V'aznayim lishmo, ears to listen. That's it. He doesn't tell us what he's talking about. Something deep here. So Rabbeinu Bechai does tell us what it's talking about here. Rabbeinu Bechai was one of the Talmidim of the Rajba. He wrote a number of Sfarim, Sifri Musar, Sifri Machshava, and he also has a parish on Chumash. His parish on Chumash, actually, as an aside, he has also, I never knew this, I just looked it up recently, he has another Sefer on Hilchos Uda. Interesting Sefer to have on Hilchos Uda. And it has four parts to it. Three parts are talking about general Hilchos Seuda, Hilchos Brachos. The fourth one is talking about the Seuda, the Asilavo, where all the tzaddikim are going to sit around in the Or Levyasan, in the skin, the leather of the Levyasan, the sukkah made out of the Levyasan. And that's what the fourth section of the Sefer talks about. So he was obviously very versed in Kabbalah. He says, I'll tell you exactly what's going on here. Says, Aderech Kabbalah, Mitzvah Yibum to'elas gedola lenefesh ames. Yibum is a great value, it's very effective for the nefesh who died. And Yadu, he writes, it's known, if you're in that world, that it's more effective for the new neshama, for the old neshama, to do a gilgul to a karav. When the neshama goes into a new state, into a new guf, it's much more effective and productive to go into a karav. So that's why a brother to brother, the Gilgal, the neshama going from that to, I guess, the new son, made to the brother, even who, I'm not sure exactly how, who goes to the brother or the son. Sorry. So it's more effective. So that's, he explains, that's what Yibum's about. That's the Sod Gadol that Rabban's referring to. So then he says, I'll explain to you another halacha in Yibum. There's another halacha in Yibum. It says as follows: Gemara Nivamos Daf Yudzayin and Beis writes, "Ki Yoshua Achim Yachtav." The brothers sat together. What does it mean? They sat together. Prat laach shelo haya beolamo, shelo haya lehem yeshua achas beolam. Let's say two brothers, but they didn't coexist. Let's say one brother is married. He's 21, and he had died. His wife was left childless, and then after his death, a brother is born to him. But he wasn't. They were never alive together. They never coexisted in the world. The Gemara tells us, you can't perform Yibum. They have to be kiyoshu ya'achim yachad. They have to be living together in the same world. They never coexisted, even though they are biologically brothers, Yibum doesn't apply, and the newborn brother, when he gets old enough, cannot marry the wife of his deceased brother. Why? Because since they never coexisted in this world, there was never a strong bond, connection between the two. That will not help the Gilgal any more than any other person. They're both completely random. Only if they coexisted in the world and they had some relationship, then will that be a very productive Gilgal to go from one brother to the next brother. He goes on to explain how the chalitza process, when the brother opts out, he does not want to marry his brother's wife. Take off the shoe, the spit in the shoe. He explains word by word each stage of the chalitza process, how that is completely against the Gilgal, how I don't want to accept the Gilgal of my brother. Word by word, he says, that why in the regel? Because the regel walks, that's how the neshama walks from one body to another body. The na'al, why dafka, the na'al, why the shoe? Because na'al also means to close, you're closing off, you're not accepting the Gilgal of your brother. Then he says that the idea of Gilgal is a great chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The great chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we go through this world with many mistakes, many averos. He gives us the opportunity to come back to this world and fix those mistakes. He says, based on the Pasuk in Iyov, that you have three times to come back and fix it. Otherwise, others have, I think the Arizal writes that you may have thousands of times to come back if needed. It might depend on what exactly the error was. And finally, he concludes with a very powerful statement. He says, since this is based on Kabbalah, nobody could argue on this in the premise of logic. You can argue, it's Kabbalah, that's it, no argue. Even though logically it may not make any sense to you, can't argue on it. Now, the Abar Barnel, who read the Ramban, I don't think he had access to the Rabbeinu Bachai at this time, and the Abar Barnel wanted to know what was this Sod Gadol Ramban was talking about. Now, we know it is, we just spoke about the Rabbeinu Bachai. Abar Barnel wanted to know. Now, who was the Abar Barnel? Abar Barnel was a very interesting person, and he was not known to be a Kabbalist by any means. He was one of the high ministers to the King of Portugal, and he was very big rationalist. I remember when I was in 8th grade, I think it was, we had this teacher, and we learned that he tried explaining how the Eser Makos was not a nace as we understood it to be, like, poof, magic. It was a nace. HaKadosh Baruch Hu started, he triggered something, but everything became into Alpi Teva. So, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused something in the water. I remember the fish died. The fish dying caused the blood to go out. And it wasn't the water turned into blood. The fish dying, the blood of the fish turned the whole water into blood. And the blood happened, and then all the frogs jumped out because there was blood in the water. And then all the frogs jumped out, and they all died because there was not enough food for them, no place for them. So they created these heaps of dead frogs, and that created all the kingdom. And the kingdom came out, and they started going all over the place. And so on and so forth, he explains, based on a very teva way, how the Eser Makos happened. So he was a big rationalist. Yet he does not shy away from this concept of Gilgal. He says, what's pshat? What's pshat in this Ramban? So he says, it's based on the Mekubalim. That Shechibor HaNefesh B'guf HaYisraeli U'bo B'shama B'gugul Domo L'Achnasos HaRega B'Nal. Goes on to explain that placing the foot into the shoe, a regel into the shoe, the regel is the neshama, it's something movable, it has life to it, and the shoe is something inanimate, that's the guf, the body, the physical. The placing the foot into the shoe is the connection of the Gilgal of the neshama to the guf. And the chalita process, when they don't want to bring the Gilgal into the neshama into the guf, that's why the shoe's taken off and she spits into it. And this is what the Abar Barnel, a big rationalist on his own, came to this conclusion as to the depth of the sod behind the Ramban. He was based on Mechavin to what the Rabbeinu Bachai was explaining. Now, the Shar Gilgulim is a sefer written by Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital was one of perhaps the biggest Talmud of the Arizal. And there's the Kisvei Arizal, which is written by Reb Chaim Vital, and there's one section called Shar HaGilgulim. Shar HaGilgulim talks about how Gilgulim work. And he says there are a few basic reasons for Gilgul. One reason is, a person was over an aveira, he has to come back and fix it. A person didn't do a mitzvah the proper way, he has to come back and fix it. So the Rizal, who again, he was the foundation, really, he expanded the concept of the Gilgulim. The Ramchal in the Sefer Derech Hashem also talks at length about the concept of Gilgulim. However, there were those who opposed it. I mentioned some earlier who are the Rosh Hashanah. There's a very interesting Rashash. The Gemara Babetzia, Daf Kuf Zayim Ralph. The Rashash, the Gemara says there is, what does the pasuk mean? Baruch Ata Bovecha, Baruch Ata B'Tesecha. Blessed you when you come in, blessed you when you come out. The Gemara says, Shetehe Yitzioscha Min Ha'olam Kiviyascha Li'olam. That your exit from the world should be like your entrance into this world. Ma Biyascha Li'olam Belochet. Just like you enter the world without sin. Af Yitzioscha Min Ha'olam Belochet. So too when you leave this world, it should be without sin. That's the bracha. No sin. So Gemara says that biyoschal le'olam b'lochet, you enter the world without sin, writes the Rashash. Mikan stira kosher le'bali das ha'gilgal. This is a very difficult stira, contradiction for those who believe in the concept of Gilgulim. Before Shigemara, you enter the world without chataim. If you hold to the concept of Gilgulim, so if it's a new neshama, if it's an old neshama, that neshama is coming back dafka to fix any of the errors that they experienced. And the Gemara says, every new neshama is completely a clean slate. That's not true if you hold up the concept of the Gilgulim.
It's also not true because I'm saying the other way around, because the end of the Pasuk that says that you need the world without sin, right? We know that's not true. The Gemara says that no one needs without sin, so obviously the Pasuk gets in.
Interesting. So, no, right, there's no one. There's only a few people, right, who never committed averos. But still, it could still be a bracha. It's a bracha that we should be able to leave the world without, we could try to aspire to such heights. That's the bracha. It's a given that you enter the world without sins. It's a bracha you should leave the same way. Okay, maybe it's almost impossible, but still have high aspirations. I'm not sure if that's such a disproof for him. But because of this Rashash, supposedly Bel's Hasidim do not learn Rashash. Because he was anti, based on this line, he was anti Gilgulim. Any question? I was doing some research, wanted to know who else was of the opinion of Gilgulim. I came across a Chai Adam. In another context, he makes reference to the concept of Gilgul Neshama. I found the Chassam Sofer also made reference to the concept of Gilgulim. They didn't reject. They weren't talking. That wasn't their main point of whatever the discussion was about. But they made mention of it as if it was a relevant concept. This is the Chassam Sofer and the Chai Adam. I don't know if you remember last year I gave a shir on Eliyahu HaNavi. How much Eliyahu HaNavi? It was around this time of year, I think. How much is he a malach? How much is he a person? I think when I made the seam on Nashim, because I learned with Masech's Kedushin, this is the last one. And that morning I came across a daf that Rashi referred to Eliyahu as some other type of person. But in that discussion, we came across a Gemara in Bab Metzia daf Kuv Yudal Adamanalf. And there, Gemara tells us that Rabba Baravuha encountered Eliyahu HaNavi. And where were they standing? The Koi Bebesa Kvar Shanachim. They're standing in a cemetery. Okay. And they go on to ask a number of questions. There's a very important Gemara also because it talks about, there's an important Rashi here discusses why the different Siddurim, why Bavli has, only Moed, Noshim, Nezikin, and Kachim. And Yushalmi doesn't have it, has Zrum, not Kachim. But Eliyahu is standing in the base kfaros.
Okay.
Toso says, wasn't he a Kohen? Or actually, sorry, the Gemara says, aren't you a Kohen? He said, no, he's such an Amaretz. I'm saying a base kfaros shal Nachum. There's no Tumas mace when it comes to Nachum. But you're right, I'm a Kohen. The Gemara, so Toso asks another question. So how, if he was really a Kohen, if that's true, the famous story of Eliyahu Navi and Melachim, how do you revive that son, right? The son had died, that Almana. There's Almana, they had a son, and then the son had died. And they called Eliyahu back. Eliyahu sat, performed the first CPR ever, and revived the son. But if the son was dead, how could Eliyahu, who was a Kohen, revive the son? So the Radvaz deals with this question. But first, the Tosa says, because B'kuach Nefesh. He knew for sure that he was able to save the son. He knew it was Kohos. And because of Pikuach Nefesh, he was able to go become Tumas Meis in order to revive the son. The Radvaz in Chayek Vav Simen Beit Al Paim Reish Gimel, Simen Beit Al Paim Reish Gimel, He answers like seven different answers for this question. How was Eliyahu HaNavi, who was a Kohen, able to revive the son? The first he writes, the son was never really dead. Maybe unconscious or something, unconscious, he was knocked out. He was never really dead. Others interpreted that he wasn't even Jewish. He wasn't Jewish at all. And this goes against the ones who some say this was actually Yonah. This son turned out to be Yonah HaNavi. That wouldn't work out with that, but some give the answer. See, Rabbeinu Bachai gives that answer that he wasn't Jewish. Says maybe because it was a Harosh Shah he was allowed, because Kadesh is Kadesh Shem Shemaim Al-Yado. It was a great Kiddush Hashem when Eliyahu HaNavi did for the Kiddush Hashem. That was enough of a reason to become Tumas Meis. Then he gives another answer. Well, maybe because it's a Meitz Mitzvah, there's no one there to bury the son. So in the case of a Tumas Meitz Mitzvah and the Tumas Duchuya, even a Kohen could become Tumas Meis for Meitz Mitzvah. But finally, his final answer, he writes, how do we know Eliyahu HaNavi is a Kohen? How does the Gemara know that? What? He was Pinchas, he said. The Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar and other places say that Eliyahu was Pinchas. And was Pinchas a Kohen? Was Pinchas always a Kohen? No, no. He was Zochet the Kuna. And he turned into Eliyahu HaNavi Samson. So that's how we know he's a Kohen. So he writes the Radvaz. Now it's really against the Gemara, but he writes, Lefi das chachman nistaros lo kasher klal. Those who say Pinchas was Eliyahu, Shorash Nishmasel Shapinchas. It was the neshama of Pinchas. But it doesn't mean the neshama will turn a person into a Kohen. Eliyahu's father wasn't a Kohen, he wasn't a Kohen. He may have had the neshama of Pinchas, but he wasn't a Kohen because of the neshama. And so, what about the Gemara? The Gemara says to Eliyahu, weren't you a Kohen? So Eliyahu said, no, I'm not a Kohen. But he didn't say that. He said, oh, you're right, but it's a basic kfaras of nachum. So Radvaz says, very interesting, he didn't want to reveal to him the real truth. People thought he was really a Kohen because he was Pinchas, I guess, but he didn't want to tell him he was only the neshama of Pinchas, but not really Pinchas. Okay, either way, the Radvaz was toying with the idea of Gilgul neshamos. I was talking to a friend of mine over Shabbos about the shiur I was planning on giving. So that's a fascinating. He remembered that Mishra Brura somewhere had discussed this issue. Mishra Brura discusses Gilgul Neshamos. And I did a search. We ended up finding it on Shabbos together. And then after I did a search, this is the only place that this came up in the Mishra Brura. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us a well-known halacha, the din of tzitzis in Beis Kvar. So I'm sure Eitan can tell us all about this. And what?
Rava.
With Rava, I'm not sure. There's a whole Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote Rava. I don't remember. Maybe. Anyways, the Gemara says, and then Shulchan Aruch writes, "Mutar likanes beveis kfaros v'hu lavush tzitzis." A person is allowed to enter the cemetery wearing tzitzis. V'hu shelo yeh nigral kfaros, as long as the tzitzis aren't dragging along. Va'im hu nigral kfaros, but if they are dragging, aser mishum loeg l'rush. Which loeg l'rush? Making fun of the Rosh is a poor person. In this case, the person who's poor, who is the mace, who has no opportunity for mitzvahs. You're making fun. I'm wearing tzitzis and you're not. You're making fun. So therefore, you're not allowed to wear tzitzis, dragging along the base kvaros. He says, those are only those days, so they put their tzitzis for themselves. But nowadays, we only do l'shem mitzvah. Even if they're not dragging along, even they're just sticking out, you can't wear a tzitzis. But if they're covered, it's allowed. So that's why if you go to the cemetery, if you have your tzitzis out, you tuck them in. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Prima Gadim. So this seemingly would only be true if you're passing by a cemetery, a grave of a male over 13 who is chayv mitzvah. But let's say there's a katan under the age of 13 who is never chayv mitzvah, it wouldn't be loeg l'rush. Or alternatively, what about a woman? A woman is never chayv mitzvah tzitzis. So it wouldn't be loeg l'rush to her. So listen to what the Mishnah Berurah writes. This halacha applies that you have to cover your tzitzis v'afilu b'kevesh al katan. Why? Yesh lahachmir mishum loeg l'rush. Okay, still why? Why if the machmir? He was a katan. He wasn't chayv in tzitzis. The shema nishmas adam gadol. Maybe this katan was a gilgul of an adam gadol. Oftentimes, we hear sad stories. No, children dying early, a young age. And sometimes you hear responses from Gedolim. Chaim Kanievsky has said this in certain instances. It's probably a Gilgal of a big tzaddik. Because if you're holding the Gitz, it's strange for us to hear those. What does that mean? But if you're versed in the Sifrei Kabbalah and the Gilgulim, you can understand a little bit. The Mishnah Berurah tells us, even by Katan's Kever, you have to talk your Chitzin, because maybe he was from an Adam Gadol. But a Kever Shel Isha, he writes, Dibichaya Gam Kem Petur Lekel Mishun Leglerash. He says, we're not concerned that, and the Prima Gadol elaborates, we're not concerned necessarily that it was a male Gilgul, male Neshama, that left to go to a woman. Though it could happen, the people God seems to agree to it, it's possible, but it's unlikely. However, Gilgal works, it usually goes from woman to woman, man to man, I guess, and therefore, we're not concerned. So therefore, by a woman's kever, you're allowed to wear tzitzis out, it seems, from this Mishnah Berurah. But the idea is, the Mishnah Berurah here, there's a law, there's a nafkamina. There's a nafkamina lalach, the Mishnah Berurah addresses, of the conduct of Gilgal neshamos. I know people are against it, people are very for it, but it's spoken, and many of the Gedolim do discuss this concept.
Jealous or upset that he can't wear it in the future. And for a woman, it never applied at all, so she would never, even if it's about meet Adam Gadol, that somebody really wants to do mitzvahs or something. I'm saying, like, it doesn't sound mefurish, that, like, it's definitely something like the Gilgal.
I think it's prima furish, but if you look at Prima Gadlim, he talks about, we're not choshesh that the Gilgal Zachar goes to a Gilgal of Nisha. But I think it's pretty clear that's what he means. Now let's take a few moments to understand. Now that seems, I think, yeah.
It just seems very weird that using the example, it's just because isn't a mace wrapped in a palace for the very.
Yeah. And that's a general discussion about that. But that had nothing to do with Gilgal, just in general about sitzes, the way maces are wrapped. Why, this is the example.
I'm saying it's interesting over here in the case of Gilgal, they're saying that you should tuck your tzitzis in so you're not, let's say, mocking the mace, but the mace is wearing the towels.
I'm saying that's not a Gilgal question, that's in general. Why is Lord of the Rush applied to tzitzis? So do they put the tzitzis? I don't remember. I'll look into it. So let's just be a few moments now to discuss very little how Gilgal works. Get a little understanding. Now that I think most or many hold to the concept of Gilgal, how exactly does this work? Just a little tip of the iceberg. This is going to get very deep. I'll go on the board to draw out some things here. The Rizal tells us that man is made up of five different parts. Let's go from the other side. I'll move away in a second. Okay, fine. For anyone know the first level, the basic level?
Nefesh.
That's nefesh. Nefesh is basically the lowest level that exists, and nefesh is nefesh adam. It's about blood. It's about behema. It's the want of physical gashmis. That's the base level. Then there, who knows what's next? Ruach, which represents the emotional. Right? I have this all down here, just to make sure I get everything right. Okay. And who knows what's next?
Neshama.
Neshama, which is the intellectual. Then there is last Chaya, which is something like life, or something. And last one is Zechida. And now, these five components come from five different worlds. There's Bria, there's, what's the order exactly? It's Asiya, Yitzira, Bria, Atzilus, and then Adam HaKadma. They're five different worlds. They come from five different places. Now, the way it works is each individual, that Arizal explains, you're born initially with a nefesh. And you have to perfect this nefesh till you get to the next level. It's like playing a video game. And you beat that level, you get to the next level of a ruach. And then when you beat that ruach and you accomplish that, you get the neshama, and the chaya, and the yechida. And he goes on further that each of these components are really broken down into another five. That within nefesh, there's nefesh, the nefesh ruach, nefesh neshama, and so on. So the ruach is broken up into five, kirtufim, as they call them. And you have to keep getting to the next level to build up on yourself. And if you get to a certain level and you didn't finish the ruach, let's say you accomplished the nefesh, but you didn't perfect your ruach, you have to come back as a gilgul to perfect that ruach until you get accomplish everything. And there, it gets very complicated that sometimes a person can have a good ruach but not a good nefesh, or a good neshama not a good nefesh, and a person's gilgul does not come back as the same exact gilgul. Sometimes parts of your neshama stay up in Shemaim, and parts that need perfection come down to this world. And they're different. You could have a nefesh in this world without a ruach, or you could have a ruach in this world without a nefesh. And those have, but everyone in the world needs a nefesh, ruach, neshama. So sometimes Reuven's nefesh could be along with Shimon's ruach and neshama in a different person. A person can have a number of different neshamas within him, and he's perfecting those ideas. And the reason I'll explain, let's say you have completed your nefesh and you're here working for your ruach. Any avers you do, which I guess blemish the ruach, will not affect the nefesh. Once you've like passed that test, that level, you can never go back to it. And he goes on to explain there's another concept of Gilgul. There's something called an ibur. An ibur is when a person has a neshama, but sometimes he needs a little help. His neshama needs help. So he'll get a neshama through this concept of ibur, like impregnating, from a tzaddik of some sort. The tzaddik will come down and be part of his neshama to help his neshama get to the next level. Or at certain times, the Rizal talks, a person might, in this world, get to certain heights, and he'll be zoche to an ibur from a tzaddik to bring him to new heights, new levels. So it's not just one neshama and then you come back as a gilgul. It gets very complex. There are different levels. Now, the reason also talks about that initially when Adam Rishon was created, he was created as the ultimate neshama. And that neshama was passed on to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then dispersed through the Shvatim, dispersed throughout Klal Yisrael. And really, each neshama that a person has is just a chaluk of one larger whole. We're all trying to perfect our part of the larger whole. You have a certain goal, you fix that goal, and you're really helping the entire klal. It's not everyone has their own independent neshama. It's parts of the larger neshama really start from Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon had a number of averos, and we're here to fix them. And we have our own averos. We continue to be most of them, and we're here to fix them. Now, the idea of Gilgul, I think, is important. There are really two main reasons. It's good to know what a Gilgul is. Because it gives a person a certain sense of purpose. We all have a certain purpose. We know we have to do the right things in mitzvahs. But a purpose on a larger scale. If some people might be jealous of another person's chelik in this world. This person has more money. This person's smarter. This person learns more than I do. This person has more mitzvahs than I do. But if we realize that we're all really part of the same larger whole, the larger neshama, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a certain tikkun to work on, that's our goal. And by us doing that, we're helping the entire klal. You don't have to be the best, the smart. You have to be the best you can be, not the best person in the world. The best, whatever kochos or Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you, you have to fix that aspect of things. So they asked, how does a person know what their tikkun is? How do they know what they're supposed to be doing in this world? So that Rizal was in a certain level. It said that Rizal learned with Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu told him to start putting the things in words, start to publicizing the Kabbalah and everything. He was in the level that he could look at a person and tell them what the tikkun is. We don't have, there might be people out there who are capable of that. But the Nesivah Shalom and others write, how does a person know what the tikkun is? Each person has their own challenges. And whatever your biggest challenges, it could be a couple of challenges, but whatever your biggest challenges, whether your biggest challenge is, you know, you can't wake up in time for davening, or whatever it might be, let's say, whatever your biggest challenge is, that is your tikkun. Now, you don't need Kabbalah for this, because obviously anything that you're doing wrong, you should always continue to work on. But if you give it more of a sense of purpose, in a larger scale, that I can't wake up for davening, it must be that I have, my goal in this life is to, goal in this world is to wake up for davening. I have a cousin of my wife who never misses a minute. Like, his goal in this world is to never miss a minute. So whatever your hardest thing to accomplish is, that should be your greatest effort should be put in. And it's not going to be easy. We don't know we're not sure if we're new neshamas, we're old neshamas. We don't know if Gilgul works or doesn't work. We don't know, is it true or is it not true? whatever our biggest challenge in the world is, that should be our biggest focus. And it's going to be the hardest thing to accomplish. And the Yitzhara fights against that as much as possible. But I think the idea of Gilgal gives us more of a sense of purpose, and it removes the idea of jealousy, because we are really part of a larger whole, one larger neshama. So, I guess to sum up, it's of course it's hard to go against Rav Saadia Gaon, who says he's against Gilgal Neshamos. The many who were very, very for it, the Ramban, Rabbein Lechai, the Mishnah Berurah addresses, and others. So whether you hold it or not hold it, hopefully it will be a certain amount of, I guess, most for us to really try to focus on what our tikkun should be. And today being Lag V'Omer, the celebration of the Yahrzeit of Rashbi, who is the one who brought Zohar to us, who brought the idea of fixing ourselves and bringing the Torah Nistar, hopefully it should be a good chizik for us to continue going weiter as, I guess, we're coming to a close of this Zman. We have 1 week left to be, you know, the summer is always a difficult Zman, to be strong, to continue to work ourselves and make ourselves better. Perfect.